Welcome to Vallejo's Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast on Sunday, March 11th, 2018. The Reverend Wendy Camori Stager is preaching the sermon entitled, I Choose Love, Communities of Forgiveness. Our Old Testament reading today is Proverbs 10, verses 8 through 14, and Proverbs 15, verses 1 through 4, and verse 7. Our gospel lesson today is taken from Luke chapter 23, verses 32 through 43.
Old Testament texts come from the book of Proverbs, and a lot of these have to do with what we do with our tongues and our words. Listen for God's wisdom through these ancient Proverbs. Proverbs 10, 8 through 14, and then 15, 1 through 4 and 7. The wise of heart will heed commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever follows perverse ways will be found out. Whoever winks the eye causes trouble, but the one who rebukes boldly makes peace. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. On the lips of one who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of one who lacks sense. The wise lay up knowledge, but the babbling of a fool brings ruin near. And in chapter 15, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise dispenses knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. The lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the minds of fools. Our New Testament reading comes from the Gospel of Luke, when Jesus was being crucified. Luke 23, verses 32 through 43. Two others also who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. When they came to the place that is called the Skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they cast lots to divide his clothing. And the people stood by, watching. But the leader scoffed at him, saying, he saved others. Let him save himself if he's the Messiah, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine, and saying, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself. There was also an inscription over him, this is the king of the Jews. One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other rebuked him, saying, do you not fear God? For since you are under the same sentence of condemnation, and indeed we have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replies, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. Please join me in a word of prayer. God of grace, your love is beyond words. And yet sometimes we use our words to convey your love. We give you thanks for your word in Scripture. Help us to understand it, that it might affect our lives and our words as well. Amen. This Lent, we've had a time of confession, and I have another confession to make. I feel like I'm, and I know that I'm, a racist. I don't try to be, but I've come to recognize that I've been influenced by our culture, what I've seen and heard all my life, in the media, in how I was raised, because I know that I see darker-skinned people different than lighter-skinned people. And I'm a person of color myself, the PC term for it. But I know that I live, and we live, in a racist environment. And so rather than pretending that I'm colorblind or to be defensive, oh, I'm not racist. I'm friends with African-American people, right? Or I'm not racist like those people down south, right? I'd rather be honest with myself and with you and to be repentant as well. About a month ago, I was walking Karma on Panorama Street in Benicia, where I lived. And as I walked out my door, I could hear this loud R&B music. And it's like, I live on this nice suburban street. Where's this loud music coming from? And I walked by my neighbor's house, and my neighbor, who's this, she's kind of fun, but she's a little curmudgeonly. She lives by herself. She's about 60. She's white, and she's like, that stupid guy's had his music playing for 2 hours, right? Like, and I'm like, oh, okay, good to know, right? So I walk down the street, and there's, across the street, there's a green SUV, and indeed, there is loud R&B music playing from it. And there's a man in the front seat of the car. Car's turned off. There's front seat of the car. He's in his 50s. He's bearded. He looks African-American. Looks a little scruffy to me. And I have to say, when I walk by with my dog, I'm kind of annoyed. Like, loud music. I'm in my nice afternoon, in my nice neighborhood. And then I'm like, do I say anything? I don't think I want to say anything. Right? I don't know this person. And in this race kind of way, looks a little scary. And so I know it would have been, right? I know it would have been different had it been like a teenage brunette girl, right? But I'm like, I don't think I want to say anything. But I'm still annoyed. And so as I'm walking by my dog, I flash this guy this dirty look, like, right? Hoping that he would turn his music off, which of course he didn't. Right? It's a small incident in my neighborhood, but those small incidents add up. We now have a word for this. Have you heard the term microaggressions? Right? So it's these small, little microaggressive, and people, and especially African American men in our society, are constantly bombarded by them. It is. It's the dirty look. It's the salesperson who follows them around the store. It's the rudeness and lack of respect. It's the yet another police stop and frisk, disproportionate to other people in our society. And in some ways, it's like being poked at all day long. And then, when somebody explodes in anger, people go, it was just a look. But if you've been poked at all day long, all week long, all year long, all life long, being treated unjustly, I'm not sure it's fair to say to that person, yeah, turn around and be nice. Turn the other cheek. In the face of that much injustice. And so the anger and the hurt are real from getting poked, or worse than poked, that many times. And so I want to be clear that loving in the face of anger and injustice is not about accepting all that violence being done in the face of injustice. But I also want to acknowledge that returning anger for anger and returning violence from violence doesn't get us anywhere either. Because when we get the anger from the anger and the dirty look leads to the fist fight, leads to somebody pulling out a weapon, leads to a threat, leads to a shooting. We're tired of that. I'm tired of that. And so the darkness can't drive out the darkness. But our civil rights hero, Martin Luther King, wrote this: "The ultimate weakness of violence is that it's a descending spiral, begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Instead of diminishing evil, it multiplies it. Through violence, you may murder the liar, but you cannot murder the lie, nor establish the truth. Through violence, you may murder the hater, but you do not murder hate. In fact, violence merely increases hate." So it goes. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Martin Luther King followed a practice of violent, nonviolent resistance. It was resistance against the injustice. It was not just allowing it to be there. But the nonviolent resistance, King believed, was the Christian doctrine of love operating through Gandhi's method of nonviolence. Christ gave the spirit of it. Gandhi gave the method. King's notion of nonviolence had 16 principles. One can resist evil without resorting to violence. Second, nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding of the opponent, not humiliating. Third, evil itself, not the people committing evil acts, should be opposed. Fourth, those committed to nonviolence must be willing to suffer without retaliation, as suffering itself can be redemptive. Fifth, nonviolent resistance avoids external physical violence and internal violence of spirit as well. The nonviolent resistor not only refuses to shoot his opponent, but he also refuses to hate him. The resistor should be motivated by love in the sense of the Greek word agape, which means understanding, or a redeeming goodwill for all people. And the sixth principle is that the nonviolent resistor must have a deep faith in the future, stemming from the conviction that the universe is on the side of justice. And I think we would say that God is on the side of justice. In this text, in the crucifixion, we see how Jesus is non-violent in the face of violence. He was willing to suffer without retaliation, and the suffering can be redemptive. He had a deep faith in the future. He resisted evil without resorting to violence. When Jesus is hanging on the cross, a torturous, public, and excruciatingly painful execution, while he is in pain and suffering, he says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing." His words are not bitter or vengeful. They're not angry or attacking. He knows the evil is there, but he does not look at the people who actually nailed his hands to the cross as being evil people. He sees the evil in the world, but the love for the people who are there. And on that cross, Jesus suffers in love and agape for all humanity. And even when the leaders teased him, If you're really the chosen one, save yourself. I wonder if they're imagining that if God could send a lightning bolt that zapped the hillside and free Jesus from the cross and dramatically rescue the Son of God from this torture, because, you know, that's how our superhero movies would have the story end. But God didn't do it that way, and Jesus didn't ask him. Jesus made himself humble, vulnerable, suffering, and punishable for our sake, not his own. And a criminal beside him managed to recognize it in that moment. We're getting what we deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong. Where the other criminal, who was in pain, is saying, save yourself and get us out of this. He's got all this bitterness in his spirit. But one says, I can see that Jesus is suffering in love and unfairly and unjustly. And so he asks humbly, please remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus' death and suffering for all humanity was taken on by him without retaliating against humanity. And so his death becomes salvation for all and for ultimate love. For Jesus loved, and he loved on the cross. He loved even the people who tortured him. He loved even in response to the violence being done by him. This is the radical love we're called to emulate. Not just loving back the people who are nice to us, who look like us, but to be the voices of radical love in the midst of violence and hate. Darkness cannot cast out darkness. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And Gandhi also says, be the change you want to see in the world. So, nonviolence, right? I mean, we see it in protests. You can do boycotts. You can figure out where to spend your money. But I want to talk a little bit about how I've been working on nonviolence in my life. One of the most transformational books I read in the last 5 years is this one. It's Marshall Rosenberg's Nonviolent Communication, A Language for Life. It's got referred to me by a friend who was taking a leadership program at St. Mary's College. And I put on the back of your bulletin, I put the notes to the website and this book, because if this sounds interesting to you, you can go buy one. I call this like I statements on steroids. You've learned good listening and making I statements. This is like I statements that you really have to figure out. So the process, and I have to say, I'm not very good at this yet, but I want to become better at this because I think it's really close to what it looks like to return love for hate. So you start with an observation. What is it that's going on that's getting under my skin? So I'm like, okay, so when I hear loud music for an extended period of time, right, if the loud music just goes and is done, but when I hear loud music, yeah, for an extended period of time on my neighborhood street, right, this is where I live. It's not like I'm visiting somewhere else and I want to be, right, understand that this is my neighborhood, right? So the first thing is to observe, but to put it in an observation, not to put it on a person, but to say, this is a particular situation. Would I be annoyed if it was a, you know, cute, you know, brunette teenager? Yes, I would still be annoyed because I don't like the loud music. So that's observational, not personal. And then the second thing is to identify how I feel, right? So it's like, I feel like that person's being a jerk. Wait. That's kind of a hidden you statement. I feel annoyed, right? I feel kind of uncomfortable because I'm also like, what's going on here? And then I also realize I feel kind of curious. What's going on with this guy? And if I'm honest with myself, I felt a little bit afraid or a little bit worried. What's going on?
who is this guy? I don't trust this situation. And then, this is a hard one for me, figuring out what I need. And needs and human needs are these needs that all humans have. They're needs like acceptance. They're needs like order, air, food, shelter, respect, understanding, autonomy, empathy. And so, as I'm walking my dog Karma in the neighborhood, I'm thinking, okay, what is it I'm not getting that I think that I need, which is why I'm annoyed? And I thought, okay, I think what I need is, and what I value, is some peace and quiet. In a place where I expect some peace and quiet. Okay, I need that. And then, the last step is making a request. See, you never get to demand, in a nonviolent sense, you don't get to demand anything from anybody else. You ask for it. And they may say yes and they may say no. But I'm like, okay, so what would I ask for, right? I think I would ask for, you know, would you be willing to turn the music down or go listen to your music somewhere else? But as I'm walking my dog, I can really feel this shift as I'm working from that guy, that annoying guy across the street with the loud music, to, okay, maybe this is a chance to practice my nonviolent communication, but also not to just walk away from it either, because that's the other option. You just go, wow, he's playing loud music, it's annoying, and I'm just going to be done, right? Or I'll shoot him a dirty look on the way back. So I'm practicing all this in my head. Walk my dog for a half an hour, I come back, same car's there, same guy's there, same music's there, right? I mean, different song, but same loud music. And I'm thinking, okay, worked all this through my head. Do I go talk to him? It's 4:30 in the afternoon, so it's broad daylight. It's on my street, but right, I'm a woman walking alone with my dog. But I think I have something to say that might be respectful enough, right? I don't think, and I think I can run fast enough, right? Because I'm a little afraid. I'm honestly a little afraid. So I walked across the street with my dog, and I didn't follow my script exactly because, right, I'm just working this out. But what I did say is, hey, I'm curious what you're doing out here. I'm playing your music so loud for so long. And at first, man, I got the defensiveness. Hey, this is my car. This is my house. This is my music. Like, ooh, okay, right? That is, like, that's what I didn't want to hear. But I kind of shot back, right? Oh, you live here. He's like, yeah. Well, no, my father-in-law lives here. And the stupid solar panel people are taking forever. He had workmen coming in and out of the house, right? The power's turned off, and they're just like traipsing in and out. And so I'm stuck out here waiting and hoping that they'll finish because I'm out here watching them. So you go, oh, this guy's my neighbor. He's not some guy who just parked on the street to annoy me, right? He's actually my neighbor. He lives at 250 Panorama Street. And then I think, 250 Panorama Street, I got a Christmas card from this house. Like, with, like, Jesus on it. Like, not just, like, the red and green Christmas card, but, like, from your neighbor, Ron, at 250 Panorama. And I'm like, who sends Christmas cards to your neighbors like that? So I said, wait, did your father-in-law send out Christmas cards? He's like, yeah, he does that every year. I'm like, oh, okay. And he goes, yeah, my father-in-law, he's a Seventh-day Adventist. And he's like an intense Seventh-day Adventist. And they don't eat meat. And he whips this Bible out of his center console and starts like pulling out Bible references about here. I mean, I know the Seventh-day Adventists don't eat meat, but here, like, look, it says in this part in Romans, and he's flipping through this well-worn Bible. And I'm going, okay, right? And he's like, you read the Bible? I'm like, yeah. I started talking to him, like, well, actually, I'm vegetarian, I'm pescatarian, I've been that for years, I like eating lower on the food chain, I have a lot of respect for Seventh-day Adventists, right? And finally, like, he sticks his hand out the window, and he goes, hi, I'm Ron. And I go, hi, I'm Wendy. I live down there in that gray house. You know, we're neighbors, right? And I go, and your dad's a neighbor. Your dad sent me this card, right? And he goes, yeah, you know, my dad's actually, he's in the hospital right now. He's suffering from cancer. He went down to the Seventh-day Adventist hospital in Loma Linda. And so I've been around a lot more because I'm trying to take care of the house. And so I'm like, yeah, let me keep your dad in my prayers. She's like, I'd really, really appreciate that. I was like, you go to church? I said, yeah. Which one? Oh, Community Presbyterian Church in Vallejo. He's like, yeah. And we're talking, and later on he goes, so wait, like, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a pastor. And he's like, you know, in the car. And finally, I'm like, okay, I gotta get my dog home. My kid's there, right? I'm like, I gotta go, you know? I'll see you around, right? He waves me goodbye. I walk down the street to my house. He had turned the music off. Our words matter. Those words from Proverbs about what comes out of your mouth counts. Sometimes it is a rebuke. I wasn't happy with this guy. But how I did it mattered a lot. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Sometimes this nonviolent resistance and this work for peace doesn't have to happen at a protest. It doesn't have to happen in such a huge public way. Sometimes it starts with a conversation with a neighbor. A neighbor who maybe you're not especially happy with today. But our call is to return love for the hate. And so this morning for our ritual, I would invite you to ponder maybe somebody who has harmed you. Maybe harm is too strong a word. Maybe they've annoyed you and poked at you. Maybe they have done serious damage to you emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally, but who you feel called not to, right? Like, our initial impulse is to return the harm for harm. But I ask you and consider if you might write a name, or if that feels too vulnerable, to just write down initials, right? Or just write down the word forgiveness of somebody that you want to return love for the hurt that they give you. Let that be your act of prayer, and let's add that to our waters of justice, so that indeed God's justice may come flowing down like waters, and righteousness like a living stream.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street, in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.